Alright. We're going, I hope. I'm thinking about a friend of mine. Well, sure calls me one. Tim Banger, good guy. Liked him a lot. He shared with me once that he had invented something. I don't know if I really said anything to him exactly about what I have ruminated and thought and also read about the futility of patenting anything. Copyright for I have to say in alley for just being, you know. Kind of futile. I mean, it's there. I think the fact that it is there helps to do something about it. But I was just thinking about patents again, why it came into mind. I have no idea. But actually, I was thinking about hand coding replacement to things. To help people with our WebM doodad. And I the other way of the semi that can't really function at all. Ugh. Anyway, patent. Check a patent. You have to understand, mere mortals shouldn't bother patenting, trademarking, anything. All those things are in the purview very rich people, or very very big corporations. Nobody else has any business getting involved with it. Just gotta look at it a certain way. What does a patent or a copyright really entitle you to do? It just entitles you that if you feel like somebody is producing that good or using that thing or copying your work and being paid for it, that you can take them to law over it and sue for damages. Sometimes those damages entail making them stop, but sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it ends up being, well, you're going to give them a license, and this is how much they're going to pay. And, you know, it's all about the negotiation after the fact. Of course, it involves hugely expensive lawyers, you know. Intellectual property lawyers are not, they don't start. And it's all about that whole thing. Are you willing to go to court over it? Because that's what patents, copyrights, and trademarks, registering them, gives you the ability to do. I know me, for my part, it's just not interesting enough for me. What money I make, which isn't much, will get eaten up in the first couple of weeks. And any big corporation or anybody who is a little more well-heeled than I am could very easily starve me out and get to continue doing what he's doing when you lose a patent thing. It's basically licensed for anybody to do with your stuff whatever they want. Except that you've lost several thousand dollars in the process. Oh man. Yeah. People breaking punching. I don't understand the mentality. I guess it's technically fun. Instead of here's what I can get away with, by the way. Anyway. Okay. Well, first of all, you've really got to know about yourself, and what I know about me is I don't care that much. Therefore, patenting, trademark, now copyright's a different animal because it's always there. The question is, are you going to ever assert that copyright? Are you going to take somebody to the mat, take them into court, threaten them for having used your stuff? That's why I'm a proponent of open source. Because, let's be honest, your stuff is open source anyway. You can kill yourself, actually spend a lot of time, effort, and money trying to obfuscate your work. This was true back in the old days. Apple IIs, I think all the computers. Apple IIs and such had a scheme. Several schemes, mostly proprietary, to make it so you couldn't easily copy their floppy disk. You had to use the floppy disk if you were given. Now there was all kinds of software and quite a little market around making copies anyway. And the funny part was that those products weren't illegal because you're allowed to make an archival copy of something for your record, and there's the chance that you'll destroy the original. You're allowed to do that. It's permissible. What is this? Not the place to pull up. Now I've got to go up here. Get away from this. Right there, he could have pulled into the Walmart parking lot and done this. That way, if he's really stuck, he'll be stuck someplace or down the way. Anyway, so, but, you know, I don't think about this much at the moment. This is much better than Chris Christian and I on the slow thing. Slow thing. Anyway. Because when you're taking something that you've seen, you know, there's always said, oh, inventors come, well, we'll help you patent your invention. But most inventions are pretty stupid. Lots of money paid for the privilege of, you know, hopefully crossing off lightning striking. Let's say lightning does strike. Let's say the one in a couple of thousand chance that whatever you come up with, and let's say patented, some process or some design, and you market it, and you go through all that effort, all that money to begin with, sell your shirt for it. Let's say it actually starts paying off, starts coming back, really integrates things. Well, big companies, here's another, on top of that, 1 in 1,000, you know, 20,000 chance that your thing actually is worth anything in the marketplace. There's the next 1 in 20,000 chance that but you'll be noticed by a big company. A lot of guys want to be noticed by a big company. They didn't get the patent so they could particularly produce the product. They wanted somebody else to produce the product and pay them royalties. That's usually what you're after. That's another 1 in thousands of thousands chance that you'll get that opportunity. But those come even worse. I mean, I think playing the lottery is probably better money spent. Because that big company doesn't want to have to pay you, doesn't want to have to buy that, buy a license or whatever you're hoping to get out of it. You have to understand, what's much simpler, quicker, and cheaper for that company. Always keep that in mind. And the quicker, simpler, cheaper things, you have to understand, when you're doing this stuff, you're gambling. So you got to understand that you're dealing with gamblers. These are not people of high moral value. You've just included yourself as an inventor. These are people that aren't really of very high quality. And you shouldn't expect playing fair by the rules. You're lawyers, for Pete's sake. You know? You can find ethical lawyers, but you won't find successful ethical lawyers. Those guys work for the lawyers that are smarty and will do whatever it takes. Anyway, so here's what big company does, right? You've finally done something, and you've finally gotten noticed. Every time that notice is going to be, we think we can do a better job of marketing that than you can. Uh-oh, but incidentally, they're not talking to you, they're talking to each other. They say, let's go ahead and start producing it. They're taking a few chances here, which are good risks, excellent risks. Number one, they'll start producing it. Here's what will happen. Number one, you might not notice that they're doing it. Now, I don't know how good a chance that is, but it's a good chance. It doesn't cost them anything in the realm of patent or trademark or copyright law. They could just do it. What looks exactly the same from their standpoint, but may look very different to you as the creator. Don't get weird about that. It's not a big deal. That's a sucker term. If you're affected by the term creator or inventor, you're a sucker. Add that one to the list. Because here's what you'll probably do. If you're smart, if you're stupid, you won't do this. You'll make the mental calculation, how much is this worth? Or you might go to them and say, hey, I invented that. You may even show them your patent and say, I own that. I want some money for that. And they'll laugh at you and say, no. Because you haven't said, that's how being a lawyer, that's how the law works. So the next step you're going to have to take, because all on this line, they can say, he's not serious. He's not serious about defending his patent, which is all a patent, or a copyright, or a trademark really offers you, which is a chance, which is some kind of ability to defend yourself, just to open that door. It doesn't mean you're going to win. It does never mean you're going to win. In fact, the chances of you winning are probably worse than all the other chances I can tell now. A smart person will take that calculation and say, I can't win. This is, if you're dealing with a small manufacturing company owned by somebody who doesn't have a lot of lawyers or doesn't have a lot of money to spend on lawyers, you can make a deal. That's always what it will be, though. It will always be a deal. It won't ever be that you'll be respected as an inventor. It will always be somebody saying, hey, you know, we're just trying to avoid lawsuits. Small companies want to avoid litigation. Big companies don't care. They've got better lawyers than whoever's doing them. They don't care. I think big chemical companies, Dow, stuff like that, don't get too weird when somebody accuses of a pesticide or something else that they make that hurts a lot of people that they really don't, you know, seem to care. At first they'll just act like you don't understand what's going on, you know. Then they'll provide lots and lots of evidence that what you're saying isn't true, whether it's doctored or not, you know, who knows. The truth is in statistics. Statistics can be tweaked. Ask any statistician. You can play lots of fun games with these things. And convince yourself that you're right. Even if what you're saying is obviously quite biased and tainted. You know, anything can be worked with. Anyway, so big companies first going to ignore you, and then they'll say, what's it to you? You're producing something that I invented. And then, because you have to understand, whether they choose to do it at this point and educate you about these things, mostly about how the system works, if you don't understand, or choose to wait until some law firm has taken, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of your money, if you have $100,000 or more to give them, at some point in the future, they'll start talking to you about prior art. This is the patent lawyer's best friend. Because it means that you, as moron, I'm sorry, moron should be in big letters and little letters outside, just say inventor, creator, whatever. You have to understand something about the universe, number one. Nothing's new. Things get discovered and rediscovered and rediscovered. Now that we've got computers and stuff like that, the ability to go back in time and reveal that something is was discovered in the past, and that your patent application and all the money you've thrown at it to create that patent. It's just so much junk and so much waste of time and effort. Because they can produce it too. And of course, you can only apply from country to country. Just because you invented this thing and you live in the United States, doesn't mean that some Chinese factory can say, oh, we can do that. I remember when I was working offshore, there's a big hullabaloo in Clovis, which is just north of here, Clovis, New Mexico. And some guy was touting himself wildly as an inventor, part of the marketing. He invented a double cap funnel. Funnels get dirty, right? Especially ones that deal with oil and hydraulic fluid and chemicals and stuff. Those funnels can get dirty. And the biggest thing you know what you want to do is you don't want to get dirt or sand or whatever mixed in with those fluids. So you spray it before or something like that. His idea was you just put caps on both sides. Both ends of the funnel, you know, the big one and the little one. For a long time they had been putting caps on the little end. But apparently, and I had seen products, the same product, that had caps on both ends of the funnel. I swear I'd seen them other places before. Anyway, apparently he went through the effort of checking to see if anybody had taken out a patent on this. Well, apparently either nobody had, or they couldn't find where somebody had patented before. Therefore, he registered and got a patent for it. Patented it from here to PH. They said it closed paper for a while there. It seemed like every week or so. Was touting how fantastic it was. And they had an inventor in Clovis. Ooh, the next Thomas Edison. I'm sorry. Any lame-brained bimbo could have come up with that one. I don't know what ultimately happened. He had a company. I don't know if he was able to license that patent or anything like that, but what did we tell you? Did he disappear into nothing? Because you've got to understand, any great idea you come up with is tried and thought of before. That's not to be rude, that's not to say that you aren't a smart person. Everybody harkens back to Edison, you know, he was a great inventor, invented a lot of interesting stuff, and profited off of it. You know, everybody thinks they're going to be the next Edison. And you have to understand, they've changed the way things work now. There will never be another Edison again. And you're not going to become like Edison by following the path that he took. You have to take a different path now. You know? Most likely these days, you are not going to start a company that will be able to make that product long term and get wealthy off of it. That is a relic of an old, very slow moving and ponderous path. Now things have happened pretty freaking quick. If you can't make $10 billion off of it in the first 6 months, you'll never make $10 billion off of it. People are fast. People are caught by shiny objects. And they move on to the next thing faster than you could ever know. And so it becomes the whole thing. If, on the off chance, that big company is making the product that you supposedly created, if they choose to deal with you at all, and this will be asked if some lawyers get involved in it, they're making their calculations too. How much money is this going to cost us? Most big companies don't care. It's a principle thing. They win. And let me tell you, throwing $500,000 at just making sure that they don't give in to somebody, that's nothing to them. To you, it's probably huge. You know, this is a rich person's game. And there's no room for you in it. I mean, there may used to have been room back in Edison's time. Because it was, you know, because ownership was probably more respected in the past. Now ownership is seen as a fluid thing that really has to do with, if I'm already doing it, it's a question of what will it take to stop me. The better your idea is, the less likely it is you can profit off of it. The more isolated and fringy your idea is, the more likely it is you can hold on to it, but also far more likely that if you don't patent it, if you don't spend that money going through all that crap, nobody cares to kind of stop into your market. Let me give you a good example. County Fair Management Software. It's a really closed up little market. It's getting smaller all the time. Many counties are getting rid of their fairs or consolidating them to regional ones. The market's smaller. It's not a bad thing for a group of 5 or 6 people. I'm thinking of this outfit that I used to mess with. And they produce this software. It's actually pretty good. It really needs some serious updating. It really is quite old, long in the tooth, old and unuseful. But it runs off access, which indicates how small-timey it was. They kept adding on more and more and more to it. It's got far more capability than was ever originally planned, and nobody really gave any thought to how things would be used. Of course, they couldn't at the time. Anyway, show works, that's right. And nobody wants to compete with them. I'm sure the guy had hoped at some point that it would get picked up by a big company and, you know, that was always the big thing, being bought. Somebody would buy you. You'd tell them, you know, there's a contract. They would pay so much, and you would have to work for them for a year or two as part of the buy, and then you would leave and do something else, and you would turn out, you know, you would go from being a poor starving programmer to being kind of a rich empresario sort of guy. That's how it worked in the 90s. Lots of money chasing the internet. Mostly because it was new and cool and nobody knew how it was going to make any money with it. But they all wanted to be there if it did. Anyway, so that still goes on to a certain extent, although I think the exuberance has died out. those things keep going. I hope he hasn't bothered to patent anything he did or spent too much money on trademarks, because it's not anything that's even going to be interesting. Nobody's probably going to end up buying it out, because they'll look at the software and say, this whole thing needs to be redone. They'll look at him and say, Ed, you're not the guy that can do that. You're the guy that pulled this together to begin with. You know, I'm not saying you're not technically good, you're not a good programmer. It's just, but are you that kind of programmer? How long is it going to take for us to make this thing to something modern? Number two, we are shrinking market. How much longer are you going to be able to pay for this stuff? He said, and if that big company comes and grabs it, loses you to it, how much manpower do they even want to put for it? They usually don't want to put any manpower for it particularly at all. So they usually dump half the programming staff. The whole thing is, you know, those guys do the thing about the 2 years, and you think it's because you think you're valuable, or you think they think you're valuable, and they don't. They want you to leave after a year or two. It's just an obvious trick to get you to sell out. You know, are you selling for what it's for, are you selling it for its possibilities? Heck no. You're selling it at a garage sale. That's the only sales that ever take place. There's a calculation made. If they think you're on the way out, or you're on the way down, and they think they can capitalize on this big enough, what was the company that used to do that? The learning company used to buy up old hunks of software, you know, of interesting yet dubious value, for which they provide no technical support at all, and they would market it. I don't know how much they paid for the software package. I don't imagine it was very much. They turn around and put in a collection of, you know, 20 or 30 other quasi-related software products and sell it, you know, shrink wrap for $10. They were just a repackaging company. That's all they did. And that's all they bought their software for. It was to say this and say that. That's what happened to WordStar. MicroPro, which originally came up with it, which was a 1-2-3-man operation, when it was in its heyday, got bigger because it's mostly a sales thing. You always know that their flagship product, WordStar, was always a 2 or 3 man production. The guys that actually wrote it actually did better things on it. The original software was abandoned a long time ago. It never became. You know, people would say, oh no, it got updated. They came in, you know, and they made it for Windows and stuff like that. No, the original product never was brought into that arena. MicroPro, or who was later called WordStar, they bought other products. And they made some changes to make it feel like MicroPro, WordStar. It's not hard. WordStar was a predominant operating system. Everybody tried to make an importability for it. When push comes to shove, that's all you really need. If you can take your old product and you import it into a new product, well, hey, good golly, there you go. They weren't buying these things particularly extensively. Those are good times. That's good money. If you produce something that decides to become the new version of this. WordStar came out with WordStar 2000, which was not created by the same people who did WordStar. But, you know, who cares? You can import WordStar files to a certain extent. That program was already written for Windows, so they just said, hey, great, cool. I've got a Windows product. So we didn't have to go through anything to do it. We bought it. It was cheap. Basically a rebranding. And, it went on to get less and less relevant. They've made a few more versions. They made some other versions trying to get into the cheap market. The cheap word processor market for people who couldn't afford WordPerfect, which is also dying, or couldn't, deal with this stuff. Eventually it got bought out by a few other companies for fire sale, just because people wanted to get the name WordStar, because it still had a little bit of cash there. Now it has none. Until it's finally bought by another company, I think it was like Mattel, the toy maker, who was trying to diversify their portfolio. And they bought that. I think they tried to market it once before they just sold it off to the learning company, along with 500 other things that they had acquired over the years. And Learning Cafe put it out a couple of times as part of a larger thing. You know, they're always trying to say if they have an office suite, it only costs $10. It does do the job. You know, there's no word processors, even cheap, junky ones, do the job. Right now, there's really no need. You know, people say, oh, there's, what's the next company that's going to produce the next great word processor? You know, there's always two, or, you know, you always have a time and you make some money. And then somebody else, it's their time, makes their money. And people are always saying, well, who's going to make up for Microsoft Word? And you go, nothing yet. You have to understand, there's two products now that do word processing. Very, very simple. Two major products. There are actually a few others, but they're so inconsequential, so I don't know what I'm talking about. It's Microsoft Word, which you don't buy discreetly anymore. Microsoft Word was repackaged to try to be kind of a little bit of all things for all people, and it still has those features. Don't know how long it will. You know, still has a rudimentary spreadsheet in it. Things like that. And then there is what's called an OpenOffice. And that's open source software now. Originally it was somewhat proprietary, Linux-based word processor. You had to pay for it. Then they made it free. They didn't really open up the store. Then it was, Sun got it, and they decided to open source it. And, Sun got recently bought out by Oracle, which is not an open source company on any level at all. Washington hates all things open source, right, as far as I can see. And it passed it on to Apache, basically assigned that to Apache. Oracle still technically owns Open Office, but there's been a couple of more open companies that fork. You know, as soon as they knew something was happening, they immediately forked the source code. Sun had already kind of decided that they weren't really interested. Star Office, which is a commercial product, was not really taking the market like Sun had hoped it would. And so they open sourced it. Oracle probably didn't care. It was just some piece of crust that was attached to Sun when Oracle bought it. So Oracle got it, and everybody said, well, you gotta get rid of this stuff. And the process of closing down what few people Sun had had working on it, basically running an open source project, they finally said, well, we're just gonna give it over to an open source project. They gave it to Apache. Apache's glad to have it, but before that happened, there had already been a big port made, one called LibreOffice now, that really just has very little on it. Doesn't even have the Oracle name on it, which I think is preferred by a lot of open source junkies, like me. I'll be honest, I'm an open source junkie. Oracle isn't on that thing. Although you could say, you know, they bought Sun, therefore Sun's name's off it and Oracle's on. You guys just put Sun Micro, you know, microsystems on it. I don't think you have to touch it. Because you got it before Oracle took Sun away. So anyway, doesn't matter. So Scott McNeely became some kind of monkey when his company was absorbed into Oracle. And I don't even know what Scott McNeely does anymore. I don't think he stayed with the company. I think he got his golden parachute and got the heck out. And almost all of Sun's products, I don't know what Oracle was hoping to buy. Maybe they were just wanting to trim down the ecosystem. And this is an obvious way to do it. It wasn't too incompatible. Some people say it's because Oracle wanted to manage the whole stack. And it looks like it's been trying to do that by saying that, you know, the best place to run Oracle is on Solaris. And what obviously happened, once Oracle got its hands on Solaris, there's actually an open Solaris. It's there, you can't stop it. But Oracle shut the door and said, we're not getting involved in this anymore. We're changing the licensing in the future. I don't know if that'll ever really happen. You can run Oracle on any operating system. I don't think it's really in Oracle's best interest to stop it from being able to run on, like, Red Hat or anything else. That'll be a hard day. See, success breeds its own problems. Java is another interesting problem for Oracle, because that's still a pretty hot property. Now, I don't know, you know, and I'm sure Oracle sits there and thinks about how can we profit off of this. Sun had tried some licensing schemes trying to make more money off of Java than what it could make. There's some money, not a ton, but there's some money to be made off of being the producer of these tools and having the best one and selling the ancillary stuff, whether it's, you know, add-on products, support, expensive trainings, certifications, stuff like that. There's plenty of money to be made doing that kind of stuff. And I think that's where Sun made the most of his money off of Java. Giving away the actual base product for free. That's actually become quite a good marketing strategy now. But one that can also be used by individuals and things like that. Because it's all so much more important than getting a patent, trying to establish copyright. When you open source something, you're basically saying, hey, I'm not going to spend any time or money trying to defend this. I'd rather make money doing things around it. And that's where the, you know, that's probably where the money really truly ends up going. Or it's a really good thing, because then you have all these people that helped you get critical mass. That's how Java became one of the most popular programming languages. Was because it was basically open source, but it was also getting updated. Perl had the problem that it had already become kind of a it was always an open source project. It never had, you know, it was never a corporate thing. And so therefore didn't have a kind of backing that a corporate thing could have. You know, Perl had sponsors, and there were some people in companies that might even be hired or put toward improving Perl to the point where it could do something that benefited the company. But that's kind of going away too. Because companies are coming back and saying, hey, wait a minute, we can do something proprietary and get a little bit more money out of it. You know, it ends up being a little bit of money here and a little bit of money there. It adds up. You know? There are for-profit companies that have taken these things and made something else out of them. Done something that was a little difficult. The more difficult it is to do, the more money it costs. Typically. Anyway. So yeah. Oracle could do something with Java, for instance. Or, you know, you have to understand its standpoint. It's got lawyers. It's totally prepared to defend itself against infringements on its stuff. So it's got a hard row to hoe not wanting to defend the people who are not paying licensing fees for Java. Easier for them to fit into their schema of hey, this is you know, let's bring this back and make it proprietary again. Now that might really kill Java as a platform. You're playing a gambling game. Of course, you always play a gambling game to a degree. I don't think it will ever close up Java completely, because I don't think they can, and I don't think they have the resources to run what it's become. Already been forked done. There's Java crazy. You'd have to make the commercial version of Java so much better than what's now the open source version of it. The people aren't just going to say, oh, you know what, I can do that with the old Java, the old open source, but why am I paying you? Yeah, you say, oh, but it's for support and for all these tools. And you go, we already have our tool thing. It's already out there. We don't care. You know. You have to understand that one of the great successes of Java was that it was kind of tied in with the spread of, like, Linux in the first place. The timing was generally in the same ballpark. It was early on, it was envisioned, and it's still talked about this way sometimes, as the ultimate client server environment. One of the first big things was Java was stuck on to Netscape browser, which was the predominant one in the beginning, back in the 90s, early, so mid-90s. And there's no reason that Java shouldn't have dominated. You know, now Flash is much larger, but it's starting to kind of wane as well. But everybody thought that software development was just Perl for fast and dirty stuff and CGI. It programmed in C, maybe C++, if you did Unix work. And Java also came on the scene about the same time that Linux did, and they grew together in parallel with each other. They both set off the success of the other over time. And Java's still out there. It's still probably, among most people, it's got some features that are great. Most other programming languages have it now too, but they were latecomers, it didn't matter. Like anything else, you know, you can say, oh, we got a superior product, and you know, you know what? It's tricky to say that. It's still lightning striking. And you better profit off of it fast. Because chances of it being a long-term moneymaker, long-term success, something that you can produce over, like, say, for instance, the human lifetime. And so they could say, I've done this for my entire life. That's tricky. Now, programming languages can do that. Although I dare say now, to be a Perl programmer is not a very marketable skill anymore. Sorry to say it. Don't mean to be rude, but if you want to get a job that says, you know, Perl programmer on it, chances are those jobs don't even, you can't find very many of those. You can find any of them now. But that's true of PHP too. PHP is a little long in the tooth now. Very established, very good. But, you know, but it has to be one of the tools in your arsenal now. It can't be the only one. Oh, I know PHP, and you go, well, how much more do you know? You know, well, You go pipe up? No. You go up? You gotta be able to work in several different paradigms. Anyway, so that's kind of thing that's going on. So this guy that created this one wiki, really good wiki, but it's programmed in Perl. I think that's one of its real downsides. If he could come back and program it, I don't even know if PHP's writing the program in now. That's tricky to say. It was a good thing, because he was trying to establish the fact that he's a good Perl programmer. I think he's done it. And, but that's just as important as anything else. You know, when I try to take a look and say, well, I've done some light programming, I have few things I can show to say, yeah, I've done this. Which is funny because I never could have taught myself the program. Although, I think I can support myself pretty well. I mean, shifting ones at that. But honestly, custom programming seems a little bit weird. It ends up being something that you outsource as well. You know. If you buy something like an Oracle database, you're typically going to also buy some knowledge of this. Somebody who knows how to use it will probably be a quasi, something that that's all they do all day is Oracle. And build up stuff with Oracle tools. So you don't have to. A lot of things are going that way. I don't know where the realm of custom programming is really going. Some people say it'll always be there, and I think it's just starting to say it will be. Solutions, I think that's what ultimately happens. I prefer the cheap open source ones. Tell people to pay me for me, not for my product. But it comes off. some point, I just need to stop. I need to stop bouncing around, particularly. And, keep doing what I do. Probably want to do it at a higher level. I need to figure out some things. Money, stuff like that. How much money I need to make. Stuff like that. Anyway, hey. Well, it took me 1 hour. Oh, I walked for a while before I did this. Okay. Oops, no call.